From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Gabe, where's the birthday cake? Gabe, this is our 20th anniversary of the Bishop's Radio Hour. Started early October of 1999. This was Bishop Wiegand's idea, and he had a studio built in what was the new Pastoral Center back then, a little few years prior to that, and it was his idea to have a Catholic radio program. He was approached by Doug Sherman of Immaculate Heart Radio, who had started the Immaculate Heart Radio Network up in Reno, and this was one of the first stations to accept, may have been the first one, the first diocese to accept Doug's offer of a Bishop's Hour. So that was 20 years ago, and Father Jim Murphy was very involved, Monsignor Murphy was very involved in it. Father Sylvester McDermott, the late Father Sylvester McDermott, was very involved in it too. And here we are 20 years later. So it seems like yesterday, and it's a labor of love, and I feel very blessed, and want to thank everybody who has listened over those 20 years, and also all the great underwriters who have helped sponsor this program. And that's your help and support has been tremendous, and all the people that send us emails and call in and et cetera, and all the people who have been guests on this program. It's just been a tremendous, tremendous experience. So I thank you all for that. Well, Andy Rivas, the executive director of the California Catholic Conference, joins us now by phone. Andy, good day.
Are you there?
No, there we are. Andy?
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. It's a beautiful day. It's a great day.
It's a great day. It's another great day in paradise.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. That expression, it's a great day in paradise, you know, has been with us for, I don't know, for centuries. And yet here in California, when you say paradise, we think of the terrible tragedy almost a year ago now up in paradise, and and all the things that have I was just talking to somebody the other day who had gone up to help get the high school reopened, you know, and and to see the spirit in that town, and the people coming back, and the high school football team playing their first game, and so many people packing the stadium, and to see that, it's what our faith's all about. It's about hope.
Yeah. And it's been amazing to watch. It just reinforces our faith in God and what He has given to us.
Indeed. So, Andy, what's happening with the California legislature and our governor?
We're all kind of waiting.
Yes.
Right now, we're in the midst of this what is called the signing period.
Uh-huh.
The legislature has ended. Their session has come to an end. So the everything shifts over to the governor's office, and whether he signs or vetoes the bills that the legislature has handed to him. So he has been reviewing the bills and making decisions for several of the bills that we've been tracking. We're still waiting to see what he's going to do. He did take a break. Last week he went to New York to the UN, to the climate summit.
The climate summit, right.
Yeah, so that seemed to put things on hold for a few days, and now we're looking at the last 2 weeks of the signing period, so we're kind of anxious to see what he does.
Now, we're not talking about a small number of bills either. I mean, how many bills in the last year actually got passed by both chambers and sent to the governor?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. I know it was thousands of bills were submitted.
Some years I know we've passed in excess of 1,000 actually got passed, you know.
Yeah, and I think that is true this time as well, just over 1,000.
Wow.
I don't know the number, though, but in terms of what we were tracking, the bills that we felt were of importance in either advancing or hurting the church public policies, we were tracking about 300 to 400 bills.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's amazing to me. Okay, so last January, we had all these laws in place, and now come next January, we're going to have 1,000 more in place. It's like, well, what were we missing? You know, it's like, and I guess a lot of them aren't quote unquote significant. I think of any law as significant. It's not like there's now 1,000 things that weren't a crime a year ago and are now a crime. It's not it's not that dramatic, but it is interesting to think that every year we're really tweaking everything and then sometimes dramatically changing things.
Yeah, but some of them were pretty small. Like there was the one bill, 806, which actually redid the law that helped homeless kids go to college.
Uh-huh.
So that was set to sunset in 2020, so the legislature took that up and passed it, and the governor signed it. So it will continue.
It just continues.
Help.
It's a re-up, not a brand-new law.
Right. So there were a lot of bills like that, but there were a lot of significant ones as well that is going to have a huge impact on the state, which just goes to your point. It makes you wonder, well, why were we missing that in the first
yes,
place?
Exactly. So how do you track 300 to 400 bills? And when you're tracking them, what does that mean? You break down your staff into, okay, you're in this area and you're in this area?
Yes. Thank God I have an excellent staff who knows their stuff, whether it's my staff that handles education or that handles the life issues or justice issues, criminal justice issues, those kinds of things. They have their own areas, and so they'll look at the bills that are being introduced and see whether or not they impact in ways that are either good, that we think will be good, or harmful. And we follow them, and we speak out on them sometimes.
And, of course, the conference, which represents all the bishops of the state of California, doesn't take a stand on political candidates, but does very much take a stand on issues.
Correct. And that's really our mission. Our mission is to advance the public policies of the Catholic Church and the bishops of California. So it doesn't matter which political party is in power, and we don't take positions on either political party. We will work with both, and we know we have challenges with both. So what matters for us is, what are they attempting to do in the Capitol?
Yeah, it's one of the things that makes me proud to be Catholic, is that the conference does not shy away from any issues. No matter how difficult, how divisive, or the fact that the faithful may even be divided on certain issues. The conference not only takes a position, but issues statements that are very explanatory of why this position was taken, you know.
Right.
The wonderful thing is, for me as a sort of a follower of politics, is that I know there was no money thrown your way to influence coming out this way or coming out that way, which is very refreshing in today's climate.
Yeah, and some insight into that. You know, we don't refer to ourselves here at the conference as lobbyists.
Right.
And part of that is because we don't have anything to do with money. We are advocates, and we are a resource not only the legislature, but also to our network throughout the state. So we're about the church teaching and sharing that with the people who are making laws in our state.
Are there other faith groups that have a presence like the conference has in Sacramento?
Not like us. Because we're the largest faith group in the state.
Sure,
we're going to have, I think, a bigger staff. But other faith groups will have offices as well. I know I've met with folks representing the Mormon Church. I've met with folks representing United Methodists. I can't think of any other groups. There are a couple of the Jewish groups that are represented here every now and again, but I don't think they have offices here. I think they're connected with other folks across the country, and then come here when they feel like they need to.
My guess is that there will be a few issues where you're probably all united, and then a lot of issues where one or the other of you is kind of out there alone. The other one's not really opposing it, but they're just not really on board.
Yeah, here in California, it seems like we have a loose-knit group of faith advocates who I meet and talk to every now and again, but we don't really talk to each other. The one issue that brought us together was the Seal of Confession. All of a sudden, I had lots of other faith groups calling me and asked me, what are you guys going to do? What can we do?
Mm-hmm.
So that seemed to galvanize everybody. But overall, no. We have our own priorities. Each faith group has its own priorities. So we just kind of check in with each other every now and then, and that's really about it.
Well, that's really encouraging to hear that happened, because it was, I guess, not surprising, because it was a direct assault on freedom of religion. And as the old expression is, you know, who knows whose ox is going to be gored next time?
Exactly. And I heard from some faith groups I didn't even know were interested in politics. So that was very, very encouraging. And hopefully the beginning of a relationship that can help us in other issues down the line.
Did some of the secular groups, like the ACLU, groups like that, First Amendment-type groups, did they come down on either side of the Seal of Confession?
They kind of stayed out of it. Specifically the ACLU, I didn't hear from them at all.
No, I didn't. I didn't see anything from the ACLU one way or the other.
Yeah, and I talked to their representative every now and again, so they just didn't really get into that issue. They had other priorities.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was really encouraging to see how all that it wasn't encouraging to see it on the docket, but it was encouraging to see how people really rallied, and I know that you guys rallied the troops tremendously, and that made a difference. That people listened.
Well, I'm glad. It was a little scary for a while, but
when it first came up, I was really worried that it would pass.
Yeah, well, we all were, and we were surprised it came up. So yeah, it was a real education. So hopefully, we'll be ready for it if it comes back again, and hopefully we've made some converts, because one of the tough parts in talking to the legislators was a real non-understanding, a misunderstanding of what confession was for and what it was all about. So hopefully we've shared that enough so people can embrace the sacrament, especially those who are Catholic in the Capitol, and make use of confession to help them in their personal lives, but also to understand what it's for and the potential of good that it brings to society.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's even an element of, hopefully, of restorative justice in confession. Whoever has done whatever that may have violated the criminal law will, through the grace of confession, try to make amends with those that have been harmed.
Exactly.
But as you well know, the rest of the country really follows what happens in California, and
why do they ever?
Yeah. I bet your phone rings off the hook. You know.
Well, actually, even more directly, other states have Catholic conferences as well, and directors. So after the Seal of Confession was defeated here, I was asked to join a conference call with all the other directors across the country. so they could pick my brain as to what we did and how we did it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are at least four other states that have had the same bill introduced.
I think we seem to have lost our connection with Andy there, but we will.
Oh, I'm still there.
There you are. Oh, sorry.
Sure I am.
Yeah, you know, and if the thing had passed overwhelmingly, signed by the governor, there'd be a lot of people in other states saying, "Oh, well, it worked in California. Let's try it here."
Exactly. So it was a big deal that we were able to stop it here for now. We'll have to see how it comes back. My gut feeling is that the bill that we saw in its form won't come back again. It'll come back in some other way.
Yeah,
they'll test it in some other way to see what they can do to open up the church, because there are still those who feel that confession is somehow protecting priests who have abused, and
right.
Even though there's no record of that in any court case ever in the United States,
right?
There's still those who are suspicious of what the church is doing and that we're hiding things.
Was there a specific group that was pushing this legislation?
No, and that was the part that was difficult for us, because there's nobody to engage with other than the author of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not Catholic, and he has no understanding of what confession was for, how it really worked.
Well, that's God's way of ultimately tapping him on the shoulder, and it's funny. I say this every year when I go to the Walk for Life, and occasionally there's a few protesters there, and I say I would rather see a protester that maybe I could engage with who cares about this issue than seeing the people eating their crab cocktail in the restaurant as we walk by, because they don't care about the issue,
Right.
And being engaged in an issue is the first step, even if they're on the wrong side of the issue. And now this legislator has learned about this, about confession.
And we had a lot of folks who reached out to us who said that they were not sure how they felt about the bill, but why shouldn't we be reporting these folks?
Right.
And one of the opportunities he gave me was to inform people of our safe environment practices that all the dioceses across the state practice. And those are the structures that have been put in to help protect kids.
Right.
Anybody who wants to volunteer at a parish or at a school, they have to get background checked. They have to get fingerprints. So we've got a whole process in that helps protect children, and a lot of people didn't know that. So that was a great opportunity for us to explain all that.
Yeah, and it's that program, the Safe Environment Program, has become really a model for a lot of organizations.
We hope so. One of my objectives in talking to legislators is to offer that model up to them so that they can offer it to other organizations. So I'm hoping that it's a model that can be used by others, because it's been successful for us. When we were in dialogue with some of the legislators, specifically talking to us about the Pennsylvania Attorney General report,
right.
Their assumption was that the report showed all this abuse that's still happening. And what we were able to tell them was, no, the Attorney General's report actually showed that since 2002, it's been virtually nothing that's come up. That all the cases that were brought up in that report were old cases back to the 60s and 50s.
Yeah, and it's the Attorney General's report in Pennsylvania is sort of seems to have been the catalyst for this whole new eruption. Of I don't know, public awareness or front page headlines.
Yeah, and the dioceses all across the country have to undergo audits pretty regularly.
Right.
Like every diocese has to be audited at least every 3 years.
Audited to make sure that they are doing all the right things in terms of safe environment, et cetera.
Correct, following all the protocols that were agreed to with local law enforcement and district attorneys. So the reports that are filed annually from those audits show that there is virtually no new cases that are coming forward, that our program, the Safe Environment Program, is working really well.
Yeah, that's the data clearly shows that.
Yeah, and you know, we still have people coming forward who are, you know, reporting abuse from back years ago, the 70s, the 60s, and the 80s. But that's what we want them to do. We want them to come forward. We need for them to seek the guidance that they need to resolve what's a painful memory and could be affecting them still to this day.
Indeed. So, Andy, during this waiting for the governor to sign or not sign or veto, what's the focus of your staff?
Right now, it's tracking what bills get signed or vetoed and seeing which ones we're still waiting for to see what he does. And we've already begun preparation for the next legislative session, trying to figure out what will be some of the priorities and talking about what our strategy will be with those bills that will come. And we're also trying to look for opportunities that we can suggest and offer up ideas for legislation.
That was my next question. You're not just reactive.
No.
Sometimes you want to be proactive. How does that process work where you make a suggestion? I mean, you're not actually sponsoring a bill, so how does that work?
Well, we made a suggestion. We had a bill this last session that we offered up. There's a bill that we opposed this year and last year, SB 24.
Right.
And that's the bill that will mandate that all the UC schools and Cal State schools in the state of California, they have to offer the abortion pill in their student health clinics.
Right.
And we think that's bad policy. But when we were faced with that bill last year, before Governor Brown vetoed it, we went to the bishops to get input on strategy. And one of the things that the bishops pointed out to us was we can't simply oppose legislation like this. We have to come up with an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So the alternative we came up with was the state is making a mistake and only offering abortion as an alternative for college students who get pregnant and are placed in that position of what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So our point was, well, shouldn't the state also be supporting students who actually want to have their children?
Pro-choice.
We offered up the suggestion to Assemblymember Miguel Santiago from Los Angeles, who is Catholic and goes to Mass, and we said, would you be able to help us advance a bill that would encourage students to choose life and know that they're being supported? And there was actually already laws on the books at the federal level under mm-hmm. Title IX that give college students protection and are supposed to encourage the colleges to support them in those decisions, such as if a young woman is having a real tough time with a pregnancy and can't make a final or a midterm mm-hmm. or something like that, the school is supposed to accommodate her.
Right, and that's very clear in Title IX, yeah.
Yep, and schools are supposed to also make those students priorities for child care, on-campus child care, or off-campus housing, those kinds of things. So that bill was introduced for us by Miguel Santiago, who shepherded it through, and it was his bill that was at our suggestion. So that passed unanimously.
Yeah, hard for somebody to oppose that.
Yeah, exactly. So we're trying to come up with other ideas for this coming session now as we talk to our partners. We talked to the bishops and other faith leaders in terms of what they think is needed, and we'll hopefully come up with some ideas for other pieces of legislation that we think will be good.
But you know, it's interesting. I mean, with all this the big stuff pending, the one thing the governor did sign that made news all over the country was that you could. California would become the first state to allow college athletes to sell their image and likeness. I'm made in the image and likeness of God. My autograph ought to be worth millions.
and we supported the athletes. I mean, it's one thing for an athlete to play a sport at his school for his scholarship
right.
and his education. But athletes' images and anything outside of that, which is based on them, that people make money off of, we're supportive of that. You know, God bless them if they can make some money. We know those few athletes who can. God bless them. Hopefully they can.
Did the conference actually take a position?
No, it wasn't. It didn't rise up as a priority since it affected.
I didn't think so, but
But
it's interesting though. The thing that really struck me about this, all the UCs were against it. All the Pac-12 was against it. The NCAA, of course, was against it. The governor got all kinds of calls against it. But the thing that really struck me was it passed the Senate 39-0. It passed the Assembly 73-0.
Yeah.
When has that ever happened on? You can't get people today to agree on what time lunch is. You know, it's like to get both houses of the legislature to pass this unanimously, especially with all the opposition out there, was mind-boggling.
Yeah, it was impressive. And it wasn't as though it required a lot of grassroots networking to get it done. People saw the innate value of what was being argued, and they agreed with it. So it was pretty obvious what was going to happen, and everybody agreed. So other than the NCAA and the UCs and the colleges.
It's those of us who follow sports, as I know you do, it's fraught with I have lots of questions about it. Like, what, you know, like, okay, I can sell my autograph now. Like I'm a red hot quarterback for a Pac-12 school or something, and I can now sell my autograph. What's to keep some super booster from saying, I think your autograph's worth $1 million, young man. Here's a check, you know, if you'll go to my alma mater, you know. I'm not sure how they will control that. Like, are they going to put a limit on how much you can sell your autograph for? There are boosters out there that, I mean, generally with like baseball shows, you know, where people stand in line and give somebody, some former player, $10 for his autograph, that is actually market value in some way. Whereas with a collegiate athlete that you're trying to influence to go to a certain school, there are boosters willing to do a lot of stuff that doesn't have anything to do with market value.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll all get sorted out. Because the recruitment phase of any college athlete is always going to be scrutinized very tightly.
I played tennis in college, and nobody ever in 4 years asked me for my autograph. So I'm kind of miffed sitting on the sidelines here. Yeah, but it was very interesting to see it pass unanimously and
so quickly. Yeah,
and so quickly. Maybe you should check what was in the water at the Capitol that day, because that's a rare bipartisanship for sure in this day and age. Yeah. Randy, any piece of legislation you want to tell me about that I didn't ask you about?
We're still waiting on SB 24, and we're
right.
Kind of intrigued that it hasn't been signed yet, because he has gone public in support of the bill. So we're kind of wondering why he hasn't signed it yet. So we'll see.
We'll see. And again, there was the UCs objected to it too. They weren't in favor of it.
No, they weren't. And in fact, the governor's own Department of Finance opposed the bill.
Right. Right.
It'll cost the state money.
Exactly.
We'd love to see him veto it. We still think he'll sign it, but the longer it takes is becoming more intriguing.
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, what we're doing right now in this legislative session is really learning how Governor Newsom handles the signing period. This is his first year.
That's right.
Of doing this. So with Governor Brown, we knew when he did things and why he did things and what to expect. So it was easy to follow. But with Governor Newsom, we're learning. So we'll see how all this plays out by the 13th.
Very good.
Anyway, the other bill that we are concerned with is, and that we opposed, was AB624, which was the bill that would put more phone numbers on the back of student-issued ID cards.
Mm-hmm.
And we were opposed to that bill. Several years ago, we supported an effort to put a suicide hotline number on the back of every student ID issued in the state.
Right.
And the reason we did that is because there's an epidemic of suicide.
Sure.
Across the country among teenagers. And the numbers that are coming out of states, you know, like Arizona just published that so far they've had, 50 suicides of teenagers.
Wow.
In their state, I mean, it's an epidemic. And so putting other numbers back there dilutes that. And of course, the numbers for organizations that we really don't think are healthy for our
sure.
society, such as Planned Parenthood.
Such as Planned Parenthood, right.
Yeah. So we're still waiting to see what the governor does with that one, but we've opposed that one. But that's AB 624, and hopefully he doesn't sign that one either.
Yeah. Well, Andy, you got your work cut out for you?
Yeah. It's never boring.
Never boring. We always appreciate talking to you, appreciate your time, and greatly appreciate everything you do to help make this a better world.
Well, thank you, Bob. And please, let's all pray that the future of our state is in hands of people who are thoughtful and have a relationship with God.
Indeed. Indeed. Amen. Thanks so much, Andy.
Take care.
Yeah, take care. We'll talk to you again soon. God bless. That's Andy Rivas, the executive director of the California Catholic Conference, representing all the bishops of the state of California. We'll take a quick break. Back with more after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Lincoln. Thanks for all you do for our great Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Jennifer Campbell joins us.
Good morning.
In person. Always good to see you.
It's good to see you too, Bob.
Yeah. Camp Pandola.
Yeah. We finished one summer, and I'm getting ready for the next. Can you believe it?
See, that's...
It's the first week of October, yeah. And we're already like...
Well, you have to... I figure you must sit down afterwards and say to your counselors and your cooks and everybody else, okay, what'd we do right?
We do. I mean, we do. Some of it is informal. Some of it's formal. Some of it's just like, you know, as the kids, we ask the campers. So like as they're leaving, we have facility evaluations for each week. And then we send that out to parents as well. And try to get all that information and then really quickly figure out what should we do with that information of what worked, what didn't work, and how to make it better. Yeah. And it's already ready to like announce the weeks we've got for this year, for this coming year. Yeah.
Do you ever have to make major changes?
Yeah. So since I've started, it seems that every year we're trying something a little different to see what's going to work, and knowing that young people and families operate very differently than they did 10, 15 years ago, even 5 years ago. How kids decide what they're going to do for their summer and what's important to families is different than it was. So we're constantly changing things. So last year we reduced the number of weeks in hopes that we would get more kids on those weeks that we offered.
Right.
And it worked for a few of the weeks, but not for all of the weeks. So I think some of it's hard to find that like exact spot that it's going to fit into everyone's busy schedules. And really, how do we advertise Camp Pendola, which at its core is a Catholic camp. And we, you know, at our core, we're praying together. We're going to we're saying mass together. I mean, we're not saying it's a priest is saying it, obviously, but you know what I mean?
Yep.
And how do we really get that parents to see the importance of that small group community that is being formed at camp, while at the same time trusting their precious children with strangers for a week, who are all very well trained and love being at camp and love the campers. But it's how do we get that shared with parents, which is always the hardest part, actually, of my whole job. The hardest part is getting parents to see the importance of sending their kids to camp. This last summer, we did a week family camp. It might have been a little too long for parents to, you know, be away. But what I heard from parents that were there was how impressed, like, excited they were to just be unplugged for the week. And to really be able to focus on their kids and have really good conversations, because we do in our family camp setting, there's plenty of free time where it's just you and your family, and you can go on any of the activities during family camp. If you don't want to do the activities we've planned, you do whatever you want. So just to see families playing cards and talking and having conversations that I don't know what their home life looks like, but I'm guessing at home when everyone has access to a phone and a TV or a computer.
The only eye contact they're making is with their phone.
Yeah. I mean, I really think that that's something that's important. And even like our campers, like our older campers, even not so older campers, they all have cell phones when they're at home and they can't use them at camp. So really getting parents to see like the anxiety that your kids maybe have about leaving their phone is completely alleviated by Tuesday. Like in a given week, like they are like so upset that we won't let them have their cell phones.
Right.
And they see like myself or the leadership team or even other staff, like we have our phones, but they're bricks. We're using them to keep time and we use them for social media for camp. But by Tuesday, the kids are like, I don't even care. Like, I don't care about my snap streaks and, you know, how many likes I have, and that anxiety that is just, you can just see it kind of melting away. And like the goofiness that is so special about being a kid, that you can be completely ridiculous and it's okay.
It's okay.
By Wednesday, they like have fully embraced it. If some of them, you know, by Monday night. So it's like the joy of camp is that it's that time you really get to be kid. It's really in our society almost, it's like the only place that you can just be a kid, and it's okay to be weird and different and excited about things that other people think is weird.
It's amazing, you know, it seems like there's an epidemic of anxiety. And not that we haven't all felt anxiety throughout our lives for various reasons, but it seems to be an epidemic. And I wonder how much of it is just caused strictly by cell phones. You know, it's just amazing.
There are studies out there. Yeah.
It's like, you know, you call somebody and they're not there. They don't answer the phone. You know, big deal. Or maybe you leave a message there, the message machine. Now it's like, they haven't called me back. I texted them 30 seconds ago.
Or if you have an
why
iPhone,
don't they answer me?
And if you have an iPhone, the little dots pop up when you text somebody. Yeah. Wait, why didn't they respond? I see the dots. Okay, they read my message, but why haven't they responded yet? So they must. And then it turns into like this spiral of they must hate me.
They must hate
I
me.
I have no friends.
Yeah.
And that really does happen
That's
with our
it.
Young people.
It's all about friends. It's all about relationships.
Yeah.
And this device, this electronic device,
is connecting me to them.
Is connecting me to them, and they're not responding. And I know they got my message, so
exactly.
I guess they hate me. You know, I mean, it's like
right. Whew. It's this spiral
that's
quick.
It's funny because if I walk into your office and said, you know, Jennifer, I need that report as soon as possible. Just nice tone of voice. You can look at me, and you go, okay, I'll get that done. If I send you a text message, I need that report ASAP. Bob's mad.
Exactly. You know? Oh, no. And I've felt that. I personally have felt that often in my life. So I understand completely. And so just something, there's something magical about camp that allows you to not have that experience. And they make friends. They make lasting friendships. And it's maybe people you only see once a year when you're at camp together. But I don't necessarily always see them exchanging phone numbers at the end of camp, but exchanging addresses. So they want to write each other letters, which I think is really special. And of course, you know, they want to share their Insta handles and their their Facebook, whatever their Facebook name is, but mostly it's Instagram or Snapchat handles that they want to share with their friends. And so they do, they stay connected and they'll connect with we have an Instagram account for camp. And so there's campers that they'll comment on the pictures when they see each other and tag each other into things. And I do see those interactions and like the fond memories that our past campers have had and past staff members. There's people who comment who are staff in the 70s that comment on our Facebook and our Instagram posts and, just the joy of like those, you have this shared experience with someone that didn't require technology.
Right.
It's so special. And so it's something that I really think is great about camp and trying to help other people to really get that experience. Like your child is going to be okay for a week without their phone, without you having, you know, them connected to a phone. They'll be fine. They'll be great. And honestly, like, as long as parents remember to send like an email during the week, send a card, kids are fine. It's and so sometimes we do have to call parents or send a quick email to mom and dad like, hey, can you shoot Bobby an email? Because like everyone in his cabin's gotten like 7 and he's gotten 1 or none. So and once that happens, like kids are they love it. They love getting any kind of mail. Like some of the kids have never like they don't get mail. Like
do you have a daily mail call?
We do. Yeah. So every day after lunch, we pass out all of the emails that we've received all day because we have it's an auto print email system. And then and so you can't respond to the emails, but we get them, pass them out. And then any kind of letters and sometimes care packages we have to be careful with because parents sneak food in them. So we have to take that out. no food in cabins for obvious reasons. And then, yeah, the kids get excited. So, and we also teach them how to like fill out a postcard because they don't know how to like write their own addresses. So it's something that they learn at camp that I think is a lost art form, but how to like write an envelope and how to address it correctly.
And put a stamp on it.
And where the stamp goes and that you can't write where the stamp goes.
Right.
So we actually, during staff training, I go over it with all the staff because you know, and they think it's kind of goofy because especially the ones that have come for years, they're like, generally again, I'm like, yeah, because every year I'm having to put a stamp on top of some poor kid's note to their mom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because they filled the entire card and didn't leave room for the stamp or for the address. So we do label the postcards that were like we provide them with one postcard a week that they send home. And we put the label on it just so that we don't run into the issue of they've completely covered every space. So then they learn how to do that kind of stuff.
That's great. One of my teenage daughters, one of her best friends went off to UC Riverside. And just Saturday, she gets a postcard from her. And she was so thrilled.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things where you see it arrive in the mailbox and you leave it there because it'll be fun for her to go get it out of the mailbox, you know? And it's like, it was so much better than a text message or...
Right.
And I'm sure they've communicated that way all through high school.
Sure.
But it was just like, wow, she sent me a postcard.
Well, and the postcards the kids send home are so much, they're so funny, you know, just, you know, counting how many mosquito bites they have, but I'm still having fun. Like, it's always something like that. Like, there are a million mosquito bites on me, but I had fun. I'm having fun. Like, the kids are really sweet, or like, you know, they're excited to, like, they can't wait to see mom and dad on Sunday, but, or Saturday, but they don't come early. Don't come.
Camp directors ever get together and discuss how to deal with mosquitoes?
I wish, but no, because it's so different everywhere. It's just...
It is different, but they're universal.
They're universally annoying, for sure. And so we just, Well, that's another thing we spend a lot of time up at camp doing, is explaining to kids how to put on bug spray. So I am also a catechist at my home parish, and yesterday was our first session, and one of the little boys thought that the cleaning spray was bug spray.
Oh, bug spray.
And I was like, no, it's cleaning spray. And he goes, I was like, well, why do you need bug spray? We're not at camp or anything. And he goes, oh, you just needed to spray the bugs. And I was like, no, that is not how you put on bug spray. You put it on your body, you rub it in. And I was like, I'm not even at camp, and I'm explaining to somebody how to, like, properly apply bug spray, because it is so important. We spend most of our summer explaining to children how to properly apply mosquito repellent.
I was one time.
It's not a fog system, guys. Just not a fog.
I was up in Saskatchewan, where the mosquito is the state bird.
Yes, I've heard that.
Bird.
Yeah.
And they're even out in the daytime. Usually around here, it's kind of an evening.
Duskish.
Yeah. And they're out in the daytime. They were huge. People are shooting them with shotguns, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
And I talked to this entomologist who, I mean, this was his whole field of study.
Yeah.
And he says, well, and we do this and we trap this. And I said, how do you trap mosquitoes? And he says, you have some kind of a deal that it's got the one-way entrance, you know. And they put dry ice in there.
Really?
And I said, really? He says, yeah, it's real simple. He says, you're exhaling carbon dioxide. Dry ice is... carbon dioxide, and it attracts them.
Oh, interesting.
That's what attracts the mosquitoes.
Huh.
So
good to know.
If you stop breathing,
there
would be no mosquitoes around you.
So I just needed to stop breathing. Okay,
yeah.
Good to know. I'll just work on that.
You showed me one of the traps, and I went, well, that's remarkable. You know, it's like, how simple.
It is. It's so simple, you know.
I don't know what you do with all those mosquitoes once you get them trapped. It doesn't kill them.
It just
traps them.
Keep them all in a jar.
Study them.
Yeah, just keep them all in a jar.
So I guess if you have a barbecue, you just buy a whole bunch of dry ice and put it away from the food.
It's a good idea.
And the people, and hopefully all the mosquitoes will go over there.
Yeah, I mean, that would work.
They find out there's not a person.
They find out there's nothing there for them. But
maybe it freezes them. Maybe it just... Psh.
If they land on it, I'm sure it would. Yeah. It would not be a great way to go, but as long as they're not biting me, I don't really care. Mosquitoes and skunks, unnecessary in the world.
Yeah, and houseflies.
Houseflies.
There's a list of things I want to ask God.
Please explain.
Explain.
Please explain.
Explain your thinking here.
Please.
You know, the mosquitoes are, this is God talking, the mosquitoes are the food for the bats. And I'm going, yeah, but I don't like bats either.
Yeah, they can go too. I'm okay with that. It's this whole like chain of like, these are things that I'm okay with if they just
disappear.
Just disappear.
Yeah, you're not in favor of the Endangered Species Act.
Well,
with certain species.
Mosquitoes and skunks. No, not at all.
Oh man.
Yeah. So that's camp. It's a lot of fun though. So we really enjoy it. And so this summer, you know, after evaluating,
you ever have other critters at other than mosquitoes?
Yes. Yeah, we have deer who come in and join us every once in a while.
Deer are charming.
Deer are charming. Foxes come into camp every once in a while. Definitely lizards. Lots of lizards.
Foxes is the stuff you tell them to stay away from them, though, right?
Yeah. Lizards. We also tell them. We tell the kids to stay from all the critters. We just don't. We don't want to bug them. Because lizards will drop their tails if the kids try to pick them up. That's
really?
Their defense mechanism is they drop a tail. So if you try to grab them by the tail, they just drop it.
It drops?
Yeah, it just falls right off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Didn't
it's
know that.
Really weird. So we'll at certain points of the summer, we'll have some tailless lizards running around. there's, yeah, all kinds of critters like that, deer, fox. There were some bear up near camp and not in camp this last year, but mostly around the lake, which we don't really go to. So actually, I had to call the ranger and I was asking about it, and they were just, you know, getting into people's picnic baskets. Yeah. So I said, like Yogi, and I couldn't help but laugh because he was like, yeah, they're just stealing people's picnic stuff. And I was like, no, you did not just say that Yogi Bear is at your is in the forest.
We actually had a bear in my hometown of Davis.
I saw summer. That on the news.
It was on the UC Davis campus. I think it had just been at the Black Bear Diner.
Oh, probably.
And then was wandering over the campus.
It was looking for biscuits and gravy and got a little confused.
It was a little bear that they think somehow. They say the mom sometimes kicks the cubs out it was a very great learning experience for him. And he gets over to the campus and he climbs this redwood tree way up to the top of the redwood tree, and they tranquilized it and took him way up by Williams and let him go in the woods out there in the hills.
Critters generally want nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
We're just in their way. Yeah. And so the other thing is, like, the reason we don't generally see bear around camp is that the smell of children, especially, apparently, is really bad and off-putting to them, is what I was told by a naturalist.
Yeah.
So they stay away. It's pretty good. Works for me.
Gabe works with animals, animal control, and he's nodding his head.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly right. The child repellent.
Yeah, exactly. When I told that to a parent, they laughed at me, and I was like, no, I'm serious. I'll give you the naturalist phone number.
Yeah.
He told me to make a kid crow that'll, like, if we're worried about it. And I was like, okay. He's like, yeah, just make sure it's the dirtiest clothes. I was like, no problem. We're a summer camp. We have boys and girls. No problem at all. Yeah. So
you've already worked up dates for next year.
Yeah, we are already. I know. Can you believe it? First week of October, we passed these out at ministry days last week. So we're getting there. So we're going to go back to having, we're going to have 8 full weeks of camp this next summer. We are changing our schedule a little bit. We are going to have kids being picked up on Friday late afternoon. That way we can actually do our final campfire with parents there, so they can see the kids have done during the week and kind of get that experience with their kids. So parents will sit in the back and the kids will still sit in their cabin groups and all that fun stuff, but they'll get to see them win their awards.
Right.
And so we're going to go Sunday to Fridays now. But we've got 8 full weeks, so similar themes that we've always done. We're going to have an all girls week. We'll have a teen week. We do have a new theme. Last time I was on, I brought Miss Catello with me.
Right.
And she actually came up with this theme. We're going to have a spy theme called Mission Possible. So every kid will get a spy name, and she's got a whole theme plan out for it. And we're going to bring back Christmas in July, which will end on July 24th, would be
Christmas Eve
in July.
Yeah.
Which that worked out really well. We're going to do a Survivor Week and again, Weird Science. And I've sent these up to Bishop's office so that we can get some priests, help get priests assigned each week again. That was very successful. I think it helped kids to see priests in a different light and have more fun with the priests and play soccer with them and all that kind of that good stuff. And it also allowed us to have more intentional prayer for our staff and more intentional check-ins with them about how they're feeling throughout the summer, which is something that as their supervisor, I can't always how are you doing spiritually is like a weird question for me to ask them sometimes.
Right.
So yeah, it was nice having that. So we've got 8 weeks. It's also going to be, we're celebrating 60 years this summer.
Yeah.
So we're going to at the end of summer, it's a big celebration. We've already got that date. So mark your calendar for our reunion weekend. It's going to be August 15th and 16th.
Oh, very good. Have you ever gone back? We've got about a minute here, but have you ever gone back and wondered what they did in that first year?
What
kind of activities they had?
I mean, I have. I know that some things were quite different. I know they used to do riflery, which we do not do anymore. Archery and those kind of things. But yeah, I've seen some pictures. It's crazy. Oh, and we're also doing an open house on June 6th. So if somebody is interested in seeing what camp looks like, we're inviting you to come up on June 6th, which is a Saturday afternoon for a picnic and get a tour of camp.
Very good. Very good. Jennifer, thanks
for everything. Thanks,
Bob. Good to see you as
good
always.
Good to see you too.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.